Ramsey TV.
All right, I'm going to give you some practical instruction today about how to work through crises. Something tells me you're going through some kind of crisis. Yeah, God makes sure we have a few of those. Again, to prepare us for our future roles among the celestials. But as an example, I'm going to use something that may seem silly. It may seem to not matter. But it's a microcosm. It's a template of how to handle bigger crises. We've all been through big crises. I've been through my share. I mean, everybody has their individual trials. So I don't know exactly what you're going through. You don't know exactly what I'm going through. But one of my favorite quotes, Henry David Thoreau, men everywhere and women, I assume, live lives of quiet desperation. Yeah. People ask you at the grocery store, how's it going today? Fine. Everybody says fine. Fine. No, it's not fine. But they don't want to hear about it. They're just being polite. It's just a standard answer. And you're always tempted to think that you're the only one going through terrible things because the world looks like it's all happy. But it's not. It's really not. Everybody leads lives of quiet desperation. It doesn't always show on their face, doesn't always reflect in their voices, but they are. So the silly little example I'm going to give you, and then I'm going to give you scriptural answers to how to deal with crises. But in order to do that, I'm going to give you my silly little example. A year ago, February, I embarked on a 43-mile run in a day from Fort Lauderdale to Lake Worth, Florida. Well, it was supposed to only be 40 miles, but I got lost right outside of my house. I got to the tunnel at the New River, and I didn't know there was a pedestrian walkway, so I tried to go around it. I got into some neighborhood. It was 4:30 in the morning. I got lost. Anyway, it ended up being 43 miles. So, as you know, I'm an endurance athlete. There's no place on earth that I'm interested in. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to discover new places. Not interested. The only new places I'm interested in discovering are the places inside of me. I want to know what's inside of me. And so I voluntarily put myself into various athletic trials and other trials, I suppose, because I don't know. I tend to think life is boring and dull without testing yourself. So I voluntarily put myself in situations where normal people think, that's crazy. Why in the world would you do that? You know you're going to suffer. Yeah. But I want to find out what's inside here. So anyway, a year ago, February, I took off from my little patio here. Took off. Well, it wasn't that dramatic. I just started running. Kind of like Forrest Gump. And my plan was to run to Lake Worth, Florida, which is 40 miles to the north of here. And in any marathon event, in any sport, you always hit a crisis point where you wonder, what the hell am I doing here? Why did I decide to do this? So I'm going to explain to you, I'm going to describe to you my crisis point in that run. And I think it'll help you see what the remedy is for crises. And the remedies are spiritual. This is a physical example, but it's going to call upon spiritual, scriptural answers. So I was determined to run the whole thing. I wasn't going to walk. I was going to run. That was only going to be two states for me. And that is I was either going to be running or not moving. I didn't want any gray area. I didn't want to walk. I was even so strict about it that I would run up to like 7-Elevens. I'd run up to the door. I'd get my drinks. I'd sit down for a little bit, stretch a little bit, and then I'd get up and run out the parking lot and down the sidewalk. US 1 between Miami and West Palm Beach, it's like 60 miles of sidewalk. It's great. I had sidewalk the whole way. Lots of places to stop, sit under a tree, drink some Gatorade. The only thing I felt like eating, it's such a terrible irony that when you're training and in everyday life, you try to watch your diet. Try to watch what you eat. And then when you do some crazy athletic event, endurance event, when you're burning 8,000 calories in a day, you can eat anything you want. But the cruel irony is you don't feel like eating. The only thing I could stomach was Snickers bars, Gatorade, and Wendy's hamburgers. Oh, and Oreos. Everything went well, everything went as expected. Until the 34-mile mark. Now, I've also run 5 marathons in my life. If anybody's interested, my best time was 3:05. I didn't run marathons just to finish them. I mean, I raced them. I wanted to do the absolute best I could. I didn't want to leave anything on the road. I just wanted to do it. See how well I could do it. And even in the marathon, 26.2 miles, you always, what they call, hit the wall at the 21-mile mark. That's the point where when you're racing, the body says, this is stupid. It's really stupid. What are you doing out here? Because, you see, the human body was meant to run short distances fast and long distances slow. But it was not meant to run long distances fast. But that's just what you do in the marathon. So it's unnatural. Sprinting is natural. If you have to run away from a rabid dog or from an attacker, you sprint. It's a handy thing God gave you to be able to get the hell away from trouble. And the body was also meant to go long distances slow. But in any case, whether you're sprinting or you're going long distances slow, there's a point where the body begins to rebel. And for me, on the Lake Worth run, that point occurred at the 34-mile mark. I started at 4:30, and I think the 34-mile mark came at around 5 p.m., something like that. And I was just done. And I remember sitting on a sidewalk. I was staring, and there was an ugly truck parked in front of me. I just like dropped where I was. I was just sitting there looking at this dirty truck. Even though it was February, it was hot. It was 82 degrees and the humidity was 75%. So the heat index was 87, 88, 89. So I sat there and I said to myself, why do I do this? Why? This is not smart. This is stupid. And I look around and I see other people driving their cars, riding their bicycles, having a good time. And here I am on this voluntary madness. That's what it seemed like in that moment. And, you know, they also say, and I can vouch for this, that in a marathon, a 26.2-mile race, at the 21-mile mark, everyone doubts why they're even there. Why did I do this? Why did I start? Because you said, when you start, you're fresh. You feel good. You had a few days rest. You're hydrated. You're all ready to go like a little chipmunk, and off you go. But then the real world hits. And the real world hit me at the 34 mile mark. And when the real world hits and you don't while you're there, the advice of the experts, and it's really good advice, is you have to convince yourself that there was a reason you started. All right, now, as far as the big picture goes in our lives, we didn't start this. We didn't decide to be born. We were cast into this world apart from our will. So we didn't start it. But there does come a point in life, and I think with Job experienced this, he said, why was I even born? Why was I even born? So Job definitely had a crisis. We all know it was foisted upon him involuntarily by Satan via God. And so Job was at the 34-mile mark or the 21-mile mark at the marathon. I think no matter what you do, whether you're trying to build a business, whether you're trying to raise a family, whether you're trying to have a successful marriage, there comes that crisis that really makes or breaks you. And at that point, you feel like quitting. In the life picture, you feel like killing yourself. In the marriage picture, you feel like getting a divorce. In the job picture, you feel like quitting and going to work for the man. In the marathon scenario, you just want to stop running and sit down and stay there. In the Fort Lauderdale to Lake Worth, Florida run, you just want to, well, you envy all the other people and you just want to stop. That's when something must kick in. And that is, there is a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason why you were born. There's a reason why you married your wife or your husband. There's a reason why you wanted to start a business. There's a reason why you wanted to subject yourself to a 40-mile run. There's a reason why you wanted to enter the Boston Marathon. And when you were in your right mind, and when you were coherent, that reason was good enough for you to embark. But now, during the crisis, you really can't remember the reason. And even if there is a reason that you can remember, it seems slight. It seems like maybe it was a miscalculation, but there was a reason. And so that's the first thing. So whatever major crisis you're going through right now, there's a reason. There is a reason for it. Step number two, after realizing there's a reason, I'm going to get to the sovereignty of God. Don't worry. Step number two is you need to cut yourself some slack. Because you are only human. In order to survive, the body needs some sort of respite, some sort of rest. You must drop things that don't matter. And that's one thing a crisis will do for you, is it will focus the hell out of you. As you consider what's important at the moment. And when you're going through something terrible in your life, ask yourself this: what's worse, killing yourself or smoking marijuana? What's worse, killing yourself or laying in bed for 2 days and not moving? What's better, killing yourself or eating a pack of Hershey bars? What's worse, killing yourself or just refusing to see anybody and locking yourself in your house and drinking? You have to do what you have to do to get through that moment. And this is where God comes in. God's always here, but God comes in specifically here because he knows about this. Jesus Christ had his crisis at the Garden of Gethsemane. And what did God do for him? Sent him supernatural beings, angels, to minister to him. It was that bad. I don't know of any other time in our Lord's life where he cheated. Yeah, Jesus Christ cheated. Jesus Christ cheated because he got supernatural help. Couldn't take it anymore. Seriously, couldn't take it anymore. That was his 34-mile mark. That was his Job experience of his whole family being killed and his health going to hell. That was it. Job cheated. He did cheat. He just sat in an ash heap. I said, I'm finished. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to nurture my marriage. I'm not going to work on my business. I'm not going to keep contact with my investors. I'm just going to sit here in protest for as long as it takes. I'm not even going to move. Screw this. There you go. So what did I do at the 34-mile mark? I said, I have to get to the nearest restaurant I could find. I want a nice restaurant with chairs and tables, and I want air conditioning. And so I got my carcass up off that sidewalk curb. I was on a curb, felt like an animal. Oh, I had another crisis back in 1980 on my Transamerica bicycle trip from Los Angeles to Boston. I was in the Mojave Desert. My friend who had started with me quit in Las Vegas. So I was going through the Mojave Desert, and it was 115 degrees. I was lonely, and I looked at my map, and I said, it's such a long way from Las Vegas to Boston. And I remember seeing this. There was no shade, but I saw this dumpster along the side of the road, and it was throwing a little triangle of shade, a little rectangle, maybe it was. Maybe it was a parallelogram. I don't know, but it was a little piece of shade, and I just got off my bicycle. I scrunched up in it like an animal, and I just sat there. I said, thank you, God. This shade is so beautiful. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. The little things, you cheat. You let it loose. You give yourself some slack. You do whatever you have to do because it's better than quitting. And in all these different scenarios I'm laying out before you, quitting means different things. Sometimes quitting means killing yourself. Sometimes quitting means divorce. Sometimes quitting means quitting your job. In my case, quitting meant, you know, calling a friend to take me home, calling an Uber, whatever. But no, I'm going to find me a nice place. And I did. I found a restaurant. I was going to figure out what town it was in before I did the show, but I didn't. All I know is that I had 9 miles to go. I found this nice place. It was a 50s restaurant. It had a big statue of Marilyn Monroe in it. It was all pink. It was a pretty cool place. Never been there before. I went in there and I sat down. And I ordered an English muffin, a bowl of bean soup, and an iced tea. And after I finished the bean soup and the English muffin and the iced tea, I ordered another bean soup and another English muffin and another iced tea. I said, bring me the English muffin dry with butter on the side. Give me jelly and give me lots of jelly. The English muffins were so agreeable to me and the iced tea was so agreeable to me. I ended up ordering like 5 English muffins. And I had a stack of, they gave me those little butter containers, little tiny squares you pull the little foil tab off. I had a pile of those because I ate butter on every bite. Butter, 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 jelly, jelly, jelly. It was so great. And they were playing like 50s music over the PA. And the jelly kept coming. A pile of jelly, empty jelly containers, pile of empty butter containers. And I got like 5 or 6 iced teas. And I just poured the sugar in those iced teas. Oh, yeah, because I love sugar. I'm addicted to sugar. I love it. And I sat in that place for like an hour and a half. Yeah, I think I sat there for 90 minutes. And it was paradise. It was absolute paradise. And I forgot my trial. The road was so removed from me. I'm just like, this is it, man. This is the answer. Martin, what's the answer? Iced tea and English muffins with butter and jelly. That's the answer. So after I had my fill, I said, you know, I think I can head back out there. And by the time I got back out, it was maybe 7:30. It was cooler. The sun was almost down. And for some crazy reason, the last 9 miles of that run was child's play. I couldn't believe it. I got out of that restaurant and it was like I was just starting. My pace was faster than it was, which my pace is not fast. But it was faster than it was when I started. And I was feeling good. And those last 9 miles took me, I don't know, 2 hours. And it was child's play. It was beautiful. It was pitch dark when I got to Lake Worth. 43.3 miles after I started. 13 hours, 14 hours into the thing. And I knew then that I could have gone 50 miles for sure. For sure. I still had running left in me when I stopped. Then I got a nice, took an Uber to a nice little hotel room, had a nice sleep, woke up in the morning, did a 3 mile run around the lake, and had a friend take me home. I wanted to tell you that. So here's the thing. When you're facing a crisis, cut yourself some slack. Number two, realize that there is a reason for the whole enterprise. This is where the sovereignty of God comes in. Ephesians 1:11, God is operating all things in accord with the counsel of his own will. All things. And with that goes this. That's Ephesians 1:11. Romans 8, is it 28? Says that God is operating all things for the good, those who are loving God and called according to his purpose. God's operating all things for good. Even the crisis you're now facing. Even Job realized that. When his wife told him to curse God and die, Job said, "You talk as one of the foolish women. Shall we accept good from the Lord and not evil?" And Job blessed the name of the Lord. And he knew that God was in control. He never talked to Satan during the whole trial. There's a reason for it. You have to convince yourself of that. That's how you get through a crisis. That's the beginning. First, you unloose everything that binds you, and you do whatever you have to do to pamper yourself. Take a bath all day. I don't know, whatever you do, do it. As long as it's legal. There are many, many legal things you can do that are just fine. Like eating 8 or 10 English muffins. It's legal. I think, in all 50 states and parts of Canada and Mexico. And then you reiterate in your own mind your understanding that God is in control of everything and that you're his child, you're his son, you're his daughter, and he knows what he's doing. And he's putting you through this on purpose. Even though you voluntarily did it, it's God doing it through you. I voluntarily left my patio out here at 4 a.m. and set off. Knowing that I was going to suffer, but wanting to do it just to find out what's in me, see if I could do it. But God inspired me to do that. And though Job's trial was involuntary, nevertheless, God is doing it. God is operating all things in accord with the counsel of his will. You must know that. You must convince yourself of that. I do not know, and I know you don't know either, how people can survive thinking that there's one God for good, one God for evil. That the God we serve has nothing to do with evil. That's an impossible belief, because then it is not necessary for anything to have a reason. For anything to have a good reason. For anything to have a good outcome. It's impossible. If God's not in control of it, then it's evil without control. It's evil without a leash. It's evil run amok. In which case, I don't know how you wake up in the morning thinking that Satan can do whatever he wants to you without God's knowledge, without God's plan. Some people actually believe that, that things happened without God's knowledge, without God's plan. God didn't mean for it to happen. I'm telling you, it is tough to believe sometimes that God is behind the bad things that happen because God created evil. Isaiah 45:7, evil just means to break. God created hard things. That's hard enough to believe that. Sometimes I don't like it. Many times I don't like it, but it's the facts. Because I believe Scripture, not my feelings, not my emotions, not my ideas. But the harder thing is to think that the world is in chaos and your life is chaos and that the events that happen to you are accidental or random. In which case, they would not have any purpose. They would not serve any purpose. You couldn't tell yourself, though, there's a reason for this. No. If it's random, if it's chaotic, if God is not in control of that aspect, if he's only in control of the good things, geez, that eliminates about 500 million things every day that he's not in control of, because 500 million things every day around the world are evil, are bad. No, God is in control of all those things. There's a purpose for it, and there's a reason for it. You must keep telling yourself that as you're going through the whatever crisis you're now going through. And then the outcome. The outcome. You will go through this. You see, it came to pass. Yes, it came to pass. It did not come to stay. It came to pass. And this is good and bad, because everything in life is transient, right? You go through it. It's bad in that the good things that are happening to you, you know, that's going to change. You know, I'm pretty comfortable here in the cottage. I like it, but it could change. I liked the laundry room. That changed. I liked different places where I lived, but that changed. I liked relationships I was in. They changed. Every good thing even changes. But the flip side of that, which is a nice thing, is the bad things change too. They also change. They will not remain static. They will not remain the same. You move through them one step at a time. I'll never forget on that 1980 bicycle trip when my friend quit and I decided I'm going to go it alone. And I went to a Howard Johnson's restaurant somewhere still in the Mojave Desert, and they put a placemat in front of me. I ordered pancakes, I think, and the placemat had a map of the United States on it. And I looked, and there's Nevada, and there's Boston. My God, don't do that. Don't do that, because it'll discourage you. If you look at the big picture, it's too big. You can't do it. All I was thinking about, people ask me, how do you bicycle across the United States? I don't bicycle across the United States. I don't. I bicycle to this little town just 5 miles ahead where I'm going to get some cookies and orange juice. That's where I'm going. That's my only goal right there. At one point, my goal was to sit in that little dumpster shade for 20 minutes. That was my goal. That was my world. I wasn't thinking of anything else. You just sew it together. That's how you bicycle across the country. I tell people, anybody can bicycle across the country. Not everybody can do 80 miles a day, but you can do 8 miles a day. You can bicycle across the country. You can. You can do 8 miles a day. You'll eventually get across the country. It'll take you a while. But then it just becomes a matter of logistics. You're not going across the country. You're going to the next place, to the next lunch stop, to the next water fountain, to the next town, to the next motel, to the next campground. You can't swallow the whole thing. This is why Jesus said, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. That's it. Sufficient unto the moment is the evil thereof. You cannot look at the big picture. I met a guy on that 1980 trip in Colorado. What was that guy's name? His first name was Bob. He was an older guy. I was 20 at the time. This guy was 60 probably. And he was going from, he was doing a significant trip, maybe a 500-mile trip. And he told me something that I've never forgotten. You've probably heard this saying. I don't know. I had never heard it before. It's, life is hard by the yard, but by the inch, it's a cinch. That's what Bob told me. And that's so true. Life is hard by the yard. If you're looking at the big picture, you wonder, I can't make it. I can't do it. Do you think I was thinking about Lake Worth when I was when I left this patio out here? No. I was just going to make sure I didn't trip on anything in the dark. I had a little headlamp, but I was just worried about my my next step, stepping over the sidewalk, making sure I didn't fall. That was my immediate concern. Wasn't even thinking about the goal, just getting by the next step. I have to use the bathroom. I hope there's one coming up. I need some Gatorade. I need some English muffins. And if you keep going from one English muffin to another, you get where you're going, even if it's 3,364 miles away or 10,000 miles away. That's how you do it. And that's how you get through the crisis. You take it 1 minute, one day at a time. You cut yourself some slack. You remind yourself of the sovereignty of God. You know that you remind yourself that there's a purpose in this. It's not an accident. God wants you to go through this and that it came to pass. It did not come to stay. And you know that the outcome is going to be good. Job's outcome was great. Afterwards, he got blessing, double, triple, quadruple, whatever he got. It's great. For me, the last 9 miles were a piece of cake. For some reason, crazy, I know. Sounds crazy, but that's the way it was. In the marathon, you break through that wall and then, boom, I don't know. Somehow you just break through this barrier and then you're free. Once you break through the barrier, you're free. And you look back and you're stronger. And the elation of getting through it, the elation is amazing. The relief is amazing. Job's relief was amazing. My relief of arriving at Lake Worth and getting that hotel, oh, after that, a great accomplishment, a glow of satisfaction and joy and peace. So wonderful. Yeah, it's the old thing where, why do you bang your head against the wall? Well, because it feels so good when it stops. There's a lot to that. There's a lot to that. If you never bang your head against the wall, it doesn't feel great. I used to make fun of my wife's grandparents. We would call them, they'd be retired, and they were in Sarasota, and they said, my wife would call them and say, hey, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're taking a coffee break. And I would always laugh at that. Coffee break? What are you taking a break from? You have to have something to take a break from. There's no joy in goofing off if you have nothing to goof off from. You have to have a lot of work to do. And then goofing off is beautiful. But goofing off when there's nothing to do, that it has no meaning. Relaxing has no meaning unless it comes after a great bout of work and sweat and pain and discouragement. And ladies and gentlemen, our outcome after we're done with this is going to feel so good, and the glow of satisfaction is going to be so warm and all-encompassing that we're going to realize then, and some of us, all of us, all of you watching me, you realize now that it can't be any other way. You can't feel that joy and relief unless you're going through the hell now. You're going through the hell now. But it came to pass. It did not come to stay. You know what did come to stay? The glory when it's all said and done.